Ladies and gentlemen, this is Lincoln Rockwell. We are about to present a tape recording of a speech made on October 16th, 1960, in Washington, D.C., in Judiciary Park. We would like to explain that the tape has been copied from a small pocket tape recorder. The result is there is some distortion and some breaks in the tape. Since we were not allowed to use any equipment at all and we're speaking standing simply on the grass among the crowd. Before we proceed with the speech itself, we would like to first present some samples of earlier speeches during which you will hear the argumentative style of the Jews, which, as you will see, is confined mostly to yelling sick, 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 and insults about my wife and children and so forth. First, you will hear a few moments of excerpts of different speeches that were made during the summer of 1960, at which time the Jews were heckling.
We believe in this country, and we are going to protect this country and the white people, no matter how long it takes it. Ladies and gentlemen, you had a great American hero a short while ago. Ladies and gentlemen, you had a senator named Joe McCarthy. And Joe McCarthy gave his life for this country, for this Constitution, and for this America. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the surprising thing is that every Jewish organization, every Jew in America, with one exception, was working full time to get rid of Joe McCarthy. There were Catholics on one side and Catholics on the other, Protestants on one side and Protestants on the other, but all the Jews were against Joe McCarthy. All the Jews were against General Douglas MacArthur.
Now, after we have worn the Jews down and won victory after victory, you will hear what a speech sounds like when they are absolutely finished heckling. They have no more courage to go. They stand silently and discouraged as we speak.
My fellow Americans, this is the last regular speech that I will make down here this year. From now on, we're going to devote ourselves to other methods of exposing the only way that the Jews have to answer us. They can't do it by showing that we're wrong, because we're not wrong. And what we're going to do, ladies and gentlemen, is the same thing that we have been doing. We have not got the power. We haven't got the money yet. We haven't got the facilities to compete with the Washington Post, the Evening Star, and the Daily News. When they tell you what a rat I am, I have no way to reply. Even out here, I'm fairly helpless. I can't reach the millions and millions that the Daily News reaches, that the Post reaches, that the television reaches. So I only have one way to answer this kind of calumny and lies and slander, this kind of filthy attack. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is to become so notorious, to become so well-known, in spite of their efforts to shut us up and silence us and scare us, that you yourself see what kind of people they are. Rockwell is coming again! God save us from Rockwell! And do you know who put those in there? say that I'm going to take over America, but I say I'm going to gas him because they're traitors. And I will.
A very early tape letter that Lincoln Rockwell sent out to a small circle of supporters soon after he started the American Nazi Party. As he so powerfully describes in his first book, This Time the World, those were lonely and troubled and very dangerous times. Just how dangerous and how spectacular his personal courage might be appreciated from this recording of his appearance all by himself among the largely Jewish throngs in the New York State Supreme Court building in New York City. He had announced he was coming, and they were waiting for him. He was there to get a permit to hold a rally in New York's Union Square.
The courtroom itself was filled with spectators, many of them near victims of Hitler's gas chambers. A hush fell over the courtroom when City Council President Abe Stark started quoting from Rockwell's writing. When Stark attributed to Rockwell a statement saying, quote, the only cure for judicity is for Uncle Adolf to warm up the gas ovens again, Justice Lupiano said to Rockwell, is that true? The gaunt-faced, intense young man who's described in the court as being the foremost breeder of hate and venom in the world today said, yes, Your Honor, but that statement was taken out of context. As soon as the session was over, I spoke to the self-styled Fuhrer, George Lincoln Rockwell. In the middle of our interview, a riot started. That is news at the present moment. You'll see the pictures on television in the papers. But this is how it took place. I asked Rockwell,
party should come to power, what would you do, Mr. Rockwell?
Well, I would say that what we intend to do is set forth in our program in exact words. We state that we intend to have the FBI investigate all suspicious people, not only Jews, but everybody that's been mixed up with the communist movement. And if it can be proved before an American jury they're guilty of treason, we shall execute them. The Rosenbergs were executed not because they're Jews, but because they were traitors.
Do you think that most Jews are traitors?
I unfortunately think that a great large number of them are. I have no scientific way of judging how many, but my experience that Jews are mixed up in it, or they actively oppose any exposure of it.
Do you have any percentage of estimate on the percentage of Jews that you would say are traitors?
A very loose estimate, which I have no backing for except my own guess, and that's 80%.
Do you think that if you came to power, that about 80% of the Jews have to be tried and executed?
I expect that.
Survived Auschwitz, at least, and showed there how well Rockwell's technique of head-on psychological confrontation worked. In many of his writings, Commander Rockwell described the effect on Jews of his openly Nazi approach. The cool, calculating Jew, he once wrote, is the most dangerous beast on earth, unquote. But a Jew driven half-mad with rage and fear of impending punishment for his crimes becomes helpless putty in the hands of the ruthless Nazi, he declared. But this man was not always the high-pressure agitator, nor was he, as most Americans think of him, a blind hater of non-white minorities. Here, in the relaxed atmosphere of a Michigan radio station talk show, he gives his views on the Negro problem.
I think that the business of hating Negroes is insane. I think that the Negro people have been cruelly used. They have been exploited. We drag them over here against their will. At the same time, I think that as a matter of practical experience, it's been proved that the majority of Negroes, the vast majority, simply can't fit in modern urban society. And therefore, I go along with Washington, Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, and even Abraham Lincoln, all of whom preached that the only solution is geographical separation. We should arrange to get them some area in Africa, build it up for them decently. You can't throw them over there in the jungle. Build it up decently and give them a country of their own, just like our pilgrims came here and made their own country when where they were not wanted. And the Jews are about 90% of the force behind the Negro-Black Revolution. Every time you find the lawyers and the people who are pushing the Negroes in where they're not wanted, you find it's Greenbergs and Moskowitz and like the two of the Jewish boys that were murdered down there in Mississippi. I just got back from Mississippi a couple of days ago, and it's just full of CORE and COFO workers who are Jewish from New York and from the big cities. So I feel if the Jews love them so much, why don't we give them to them?
At a debate with an individual described on Commander Rockwell's recording only as a beatnik, he added this.
We feel that the Negro people, who are an immature race, have been allowed to get into a position where they can't possibly manage themselves properly. And they have this has been done to them by the Jewish communist people, not all the Jews, but by the Jewish race of people. And we feel that those Jews, like Arthur Spingarn of the NAACP, the head of it, and Marvin Rich, the head of CORE, we feel those people have got to be punished. And punished they will be, sir.
That applause, by the way, was made by a Washington, D.C. coffeehouse audience that had started out by booing and hissing. How did Lincoln Rockwell happen to become interested in the Jewish question anyway? Here on a Denver, Colorado radio talk show, he reflects.
What about the Jews that you first knew? Well, what changed your mind?
Well, my father, of course, was in show business, and almost all the people I knew were Jack Benny and Fred Allen. Well, Fred Allen isn't Jewish. But Walter Winchell and all those people that visited my father's home, I got to know pretty well, and I liked them. They were sharp. I think Jewish people, if anything, may be a little more intelligent than the average goy or white person. Not white person, the average Gentile. But I have found, as I have examined factually, not just emotionally, as I've examined the communist movement and the race-mixing movement, I discovered that you find a lot of Jews, not all of them, of course, but a lot of Jews are fanatically engaged in trying to change the great country that welcomed the Jews and that I think is the greatest country that the world has ever seen, the United States of America. They want to turn it into something else, like
Why?
Israel or Africa.
Why do they want to change it?
You tell me. I don't know. I think certainly we have a country that is the epitome of excellence as far as practicality goes. There's never been a country such as we have. And it was, anyway, around the 1900s, a lot cleaner, a lot straighter, or certainly a lot safer. A woman could walk in any street in America in 1900, for instance, without fear. And no longer can she do that. We didn't have communism here until these Yiddish communists in the Lower East Side of New York began to spread it all over the country. And I think I can't understand why they do it. It seems to me that this country welcomed Jews more than any other country in the world, and they ought to be helping to preserve it, not trying to tear it up.
Chuck Drake, on the Lansing, Michigan Party Line show, probably didn't know what he was letting himself in for when he asked Commander Rockwell to be his guest. Let's listen to the commander discuss the old story of 6 million Jews.
The Jews, of course, have been persecuted themselves, though.
Well, I don't call it, we didn't persecute the Rosenbergs when we electrocuted them in Sing Sing because they were communist traitors. I think if a person punches me in the nose, I don't think I'm persecuting him to belt him back. And I think too many Jews in this country are punching us in the nose.
Whee!
You
are outspoken, aren't you? Huh?
We'll keep a rack available for you at the headquarters tomorrow in case you need it.
Let's try another call here, Mr. Rockwell.
All right.
Hello, Party Line.
Yes, I have a question for Mr. Rockwell. I've always heard that the Nazis during World War II gassed 6 million Jews. Is this true?
No, sir. I'm glad you asked the question. I would not want any part of having a name of any outfit that did any such thing. I have checked very, very carefully and discovered that the statistics given out by the Jews make these figures utterly impossible. Let me give you one example. I could give you many. The World Jewish Congress every year puts out the figures, the statistics for the number of Jews alive in the world. And these are printed in the World Almanac and also in the New York Times, for instance, and in some other documentary type things. You can find the number of Jews supposed to be alive. If you take the number of Jews, is this the microphone we're using here?
This will pay you.
If you take the number of Jews that they gave that were supposed to be alive in 1939 before the war, and then take the number of Jews given after the war in 1945 and add 6 million Jews to the latter figure who are supposed to be exterminated, you discover there would have had to have been an increase in the Jewish population of more than 50%. In other words, there would have to be one new Jew for every two Jews alive. And even people who were very clever at that sort of thing, even the Negroes can't do that good.
Come on now. You feel these figures have been completely falsified.
Absolutely, sir. For instance, the only gas chamber that's supposed to be available to see is it's supposed to be at Auschwitz. I have never been there, but everybody that has been that I've had check tells me that it's a tiny little room without a scratch or a mar on it that was built after the war. I believe that what happened is that the Jews needed some atrocity propaganda of their own, just like in every war there's atrocity propaganda. They said when we were over in Korea that we were dropping germs, and I know that was a lie, and they put out tremendous documentaries on the germ warfare, and most of the Koreans believed it. And I think the same thing has happened to the American people. They've simply heard this big lie about these 6 million so doggone many times that finally it's become an article of faith. You're supposed to be insane if you question it, and yet if you check the figures, they just simply don't fit.
Mm-hmm. All right, so thanks for your question.